So we are moving into another structure altogether. Before we move into that, I will just give you a glimpse of what we went through, yes? Because it won't be possible to see where we are moving without knowing where we already have been. So in the Gapsarian vision, it's the archaic structure, or that paradise of Adam and Eve, or the full identity of the inner and outer consciousness is somehow projected into another environment, which creates magic structure. And all the impulses and all the instincts and movements of consciousness within the vital, physical body of man, who identifies his body with the whole nature. Nature is his body. His consciousness is outside him. It's not in him. It is not yet formulated in terms of individual consciousness or soul's consciousness. He has no perception of himself different from nature. Nature is his body, and he is part of it, and not even part of it, not yet part of it. But there is a difference, and he perceives that difference, which creates in him that one-dimensional consciousness. And I was referring today to this movie, August Rush, maybe somebody saw this movie, a very beautiful movie of the boy who hears the music. And his perception of the world is of that kind, magic structure. He doesn't see things, he hears things. And he sees only elements coming in with the sound. It would be nice to watch it and to see how really it defines our perception. Thursday we can do this. You would be delighted to see how magic structure works. Now, there is a shift in the mythical structure. Suddenly, there is an emergence of another consciousness of remembrance of man, that he had an origin, which is different from environment. And that remembrance, that religio, that to remember, to recollect your origin and to go back, to leave manifestation, because manifestation is of no use. We are coming from somewhere where we have to return. Our home is in the past, where we have to go. You can see very clearly that all religions are based mainly on that remembrance and that reference to the origin. Now, those religions become somehow dogmas, finally, and we are moving into the mental structure where they are presented in a different way, as a must, as a social law which you have to follow for some reason. And all monotheistic religions which appeared later are of that kind. They're predicting already the mental structure in some way. You can see it clearly. All monotheistic religions are coming from the teacher. There is always a teacher, a lawgiver, Moses, Jesus, whoever, Buddha, Mahavira. They will bring their system of psychology and establish the law, a social law of behavior. That's where we are moving now into. And then there is this mental structure cuts off man from all his relation with the past or with his origin and redirects him finally towards the future, which he didn't have yet any perception of. Actually, it's not very convenient. So I just gave you one overview before we start moving into this mental consciousness. What was noticed also by us, that the Mandukya Upanishad presents an interesting psychological structure of four levels of consciousness: Turiya transcendental, the original state of identity; Prajna is the state where the state of dreaming is without dreams, a pure consciousness, a pure perception; then there is a state of Svapna, where the dream-like state has dreams, can see dreams; and finally Jagrata is a wakeful state of consciousness, of outer consciousness. we can see kind of four different, from depth towards the surface, levels of consciousness in that. So I...
In the Upanishad itself, is it presented from Jatra to Turi or Turi to Jatra?
I changed, you see. Before I was presenting, yes, from Jagrata to Turiya. They are starting from vehicle full consciousness and go in and in most people. But here I changed because of Gapsarian view. So we start from archaic, identical state of consciousness, which Turiya represents, transcendental to us. Then there is a state of pure perception, and then there is a state of the dreams, with dreams, and finally the wakeful state. Why I'm saying this? Because it's very interesting that all these structures are coexisting in us. And as Gyatso says himself, none of them came to the end. None of them completed themselves in this process of unfolding. There are still hidden agendas, and they will all come up in the integral structure. So basically they kind of made their statement, but and were dominating in some moment of time in the evolution of man's consciousness, but they didn't complete themselves in that domination. They cannot be completed, that's the point, until they come to the end, to the integral structure. Because they are nothing but projection of that archaic one. Archaic is to be accomplishing them at the end.
And Sri Ramakrishna sort of handles that in Savitri by calling these different states as the realms of
realms, yes, what we know in this hierarchical structure already of realms is already metaphysical approach, which helps us to see it differently. And if we can distinguish these, psychological and metaphysical, it would be helpful. Otherwise we will mix them together and we'll never find way out. So this is more of psychological kind, yes?
This is a whole field in itself, to try to understand trying to understand the psychological aspects of and get to the point of view.
But we are entering this field because we are moving towards Sri Aurobindo's exploration, so we are preparing ourselves with Gyatso. So we are moving into this most interesting and most dry structure, which puts me off immediately. When I went through it and prepared this presentation, I can see how I'm already spaced out. I'm spaced out, you know. It means space takes over, and space kind of dictates certain realities which are not fully there. As Gyatso says himself, that mental structure does not have any content, because space is without content. So you can't really find yourself there. You are losing yourself there. So we have to lose ourselves now in this mental structure for a while and see what it does to us and why it is necessary. And it's quite an exercise. So let's try to do it right. Yes, before I begin, because she laughed, she brought me a picture yesterday, Rebecca, and it's quite interesting, just have a look. For those who know structures, who studied this, you will see exactly all the structures. It was an intuitive drawing. We have the origin, we have the ascent of consciousness, we have the ocean, oceanic, so to say, mythical, magic structure, with two flowers growing, two lotuses from within, in some isolated like pond within the waters. This is mythical and magic. Then there is an ascent of consciousness, coming out of the waters into the land. And you see the land? It's difficult to go through, most probably. This is mental structure, which is cutting off into pieces all our existence and fragments. And then there is an emergence, and that there is a deeper connection with the depth in underground somewhere, not through the outward, but through the inward relation to the something integral which will emerge as a unity. And it is all going under the rays of the sun. It's all, it's a beautiful picture for our exploration. I thought I had to show, yes, you can have a look. Now, we started last time with this transition from the magic to the mental. And the transition was quite interesting. From feeling hearing of the magic structure to speaking, imagining, voicing the expression of the soul, psyche, towards thinking and seeing objectively. So this shift of consciousness from the innermost hearing and including all into feeling of one body towards expressing one's own individual part, psyche, though still we-oriented, origin, past-oriented psyche, but already speaking, voicing, expressing oneself and the primal myth of that origin, and imagining things. Imagining, not hearing them, not taking them in their true ontological sense, but already making them by imagination. Changing them by imagination of the soul. Introducing some other reality of the soul into this totality of the being. And finally, emerging into that other objective structure where you could see them again. So it is as if a return of the magic structure back in the outward sense, in the objective sense. I am saying this, that is as if a return, because Gebser himself, and I found already this, I had an intuition first, but I found that he identifies magic structure with mental and mythical structure with emergence of integral. And it's a very interesting intuition. We have to see that dynamism.
Yes, but isn't it important to see clearly that you cannot go from the magical to the mental?
No, you can't.
Because because polarization, the orientation to the pole of the inner and the outer, and the lower and the upper, that mythical polarization phase is absolutely necessary before it's possible to have measure and concept and so on.
Absolutely.
It seemed like you were saying you were going from the magical to the mental. But
no, I didn't say that. What I said, that this is kind of a reaction to that emergence of the soul, of the magic structure, reaction in terms of, it's like in that movie, in cartoon movie, she, the magic, the queen of the magic structure, pushes her down into the mental structure, her soul, this lady. Why? Why she pushes her? Because actually, basically, what she does, she wants to take over. And when the magic structure wants to take over this mythical emergence, it creates that possibility of taking over by the mythical soul again. This, so it's a very complex dynamism, beautiful dynamism, and you're absolutely right that there is no way that we can come out and see ourselves objectively, because the individual was not formed in whatever degree. It had to be formed. It had to claim its place. Once it claims its place, the objective vision is possible. So one can see oneself. One has to be there. And that's what we will come. I mean, making preliminary remarks for us to see where we are moving and how we will move. Because if I don't do that, we will be lost in the mental structure. It's so easy to be lost there. Yes, anyway. And Gebser does this all the time. He never speaks about one thing in particular. And he says that it is his method. He is not interested to show us only one structure, because it's impossible, it seems. It has to be always taken into account all other structures present, and how they differ. Now I am starting with a presentation on the mental structure, transition from the mythical to mental. And here we have to, I'm quoting him only. The Greek word manis, meaning wrath and courage, comes from the same stem as the word manos, which means resolve, anger, courage and power. It is related also to the Latin word mens, which has an unusual complex set of meanings. Intent, anger, thinking, thought, understanding, deliberation, disposition, mentality, imagination. What is fundamental here is already evident in the substance of these words. It is the first intimation of the emergence of directed and discursive thought. Whereas mythical thinking, to the extent that it could be called thinking, was a shaping or designing of images in the imagination which took place within the confines of the polar cycle. Discursive thought is fundamentally different. It is no longer polar related, enclosed in, and reflecting polarity from which it gains its energy. Now, the thought gets energy from this polarity, from timelessness and time ambiguity, through this ambivalence between the transcendental origin and us being here present, but rather directed towards objects and duality, creating and directing this duality and drawing its energy from the individual ego. Now, we can even sense it if we want to. So this redirection and appearance of the individual ego, which is thinking now, thinking ego, free from the source, having its own identity in the spatial terms. It has its own body, its own space, its own house, where it can do things as it likes and discover things as it wants, not according to that depth and dependence on the source anymore, as if. It's an efficient part of it, efficient form of its manifestation. We will come to the deficient at the end and see what it does. Now I put few Sanskrit derivations here, since Gebser mentions also root ma, to measure, create, make. From here we have mother, or creatrix, maya, or the force which creates the worlds, measures out. And man is from the same family to think, wish, will, understand, with derivations of, we have manas, mind, intellect, will, manu, thinking creature, man, the first man, manushya, mati, manyo, high spirit or temper, order, zeal, passion, rage, fury, wrath, anger. And he refers to this that actually the anger, he starts with examining Greek writings, Iliad and Odyssey, and he says that it is the feature, or even Achilles you take, there is the emergence of the structure, of mental structure, his anger, his redirecting consciousness towards the accomplishment and victory and self-establishment and self-assertion, which wasn't there before. He challenges gods. He says gods are, you know, there, in their own world. They envy us. They envy our freedom. Our freedom to choose. Our freedom to be always unique. You don't know gods. I know. I've seen them. Why are you saying to me about gods? This kind of fresh perception of the mentality comes through wrath and anger. It has to redirect its conscious energy towards the self-accomplishment. Now we are entering into this man is the measure of all things, Protagoras statement, and I give some quotations from Gebser. The root man, the root that, ma, man, me, then, of which mental is based carries within itself the germ of an entire world, which takes on form and shape and becomes effective reality in the mental structuration. It is the world of man that is a predominantly human world, where man is the measure of all things. I know, we are entering into mental structure. We are kind of losing, slowly we are losing content. So you have to be prepared. So you please keep your deeper sense of that this is a transition, because we will be lost now. You will see how gradually we will lose all that spirit what we have inside. Where man himself thinks and directs this thought. Where man himself thinks and directs this thought, that what he thinks. We immediately remember Hegel, who speaks about that mind has this possibility to criticize its own thinking, and therefore it is true. So this kind of thinking, that because mind can critically relate to its own processes, that's why it must be true. But it is not necessarily so. We will see later. This leads us to the deficient structure, deficient formation of the mind. And the world which he measures, to which he aspires, is a material world, not other world. A world of objects outside himself, with which he is confronted. Here lie the rudiments of the great formative concepts, the mental obstruction which take the place of the mythical images and are, in certain sense, formula or patterns of gods. It's a projection of some kind outside and seeing outside with the inner eyes, disconnecting them, those inner concepts of the mystical structure, and projecting them in some way and building up slowly outside something else, some other vision of things. Idols, anthropomorphism, dualism, rationalism, finalism, materialism, in other words, the rational components of the perspectival world. All these isms arising and all ways of dealing with outer reality. But he will say that it is not fully dealing with outer reality, because the inner reality formates it in some hidden way, and it is not seen immediately. Mind thinks it operates by itself, but it is not true. Now, when compared to the mythical structure, with its temporal psychic emphasis, the transition to the mental structure suggests a fall from time into space. And this is very crucial to understand, that the fall from time into space, from time which is more intensity of life, to the space which is losing its content, because it doesn't have any content, it has only a context in which things should be presented. Man steps out of the sheltering two-dimensional circle and its confines into three-dimensional space. Here he no longer exists within polar complementarity. Here he is in confrontation with an alien world, a dualism that must be bridged by a synthesis in thought, a mental form of trinity. Here we can no longer speak of unity, correspondence, or complementarity, not to mention integrity. We can't speak in this world none of these things. They do not exist. Complementarity, correspondence, they are coming from the deeper mythical structure, where they are valid. Now here they are not valid anymore. What would we do? Can you imagine? We are so lost. We have nothing to relate to. Only we. This small thing, ego, has to think out now his way through and find some kind of bridge by synthesis in thought to bridge these things. Nearly impossible task. It should create some anger, by the way. Without anger you can't sustain that kind of consciousness.
Actually, because at that point it's necessary to have control.
Right.
Then the means for getting control emerge quite quickly. You know, and so when the Greeks passed from the mythical to the rational or the mental, they quickly derived mathematics, and they quickly derived the Platonic
right.
triangle.
In Pythagorean.
Pythagorean triangle. And so then it starts to become quite easy to master oneself and the environment, because the mental tool is there.
It's so wonderful what Roth says, because this is the reference to the magic structure. Magic structure is already there. It needs only to be reformulated, redirected by the soul's perception somehow, and it gives all these results. Because Pythagorean vision of the sound and harmonics is coming from the magic structure, and it becomes a mental tool. All those magic structures become tools in the mental, new tools, newly seen kind of instruments. Yes. Yes, if you have some questions or remarks, you can interrupt and shoot. Yeah.
Survive in the society and karma itself?
Yes. With the Indian society, we have some problems. And we will look into that, why it is so. I kind of already can guess why it is so difficult with Indian society, though there are also structures. For example, Manu himself is the first man who brought the law, the lawgivers. We will come to it.
Yeah, in the Darshanas, you have the development of logic.
Right.
And law.
Yeah, starting from Sankhya on, all the monotheistic religions, Buddhism, Jainism, all of them, they are bringing logic in. It becomes a valid part of inquiry. Now, three distinct features of the mental structure in art and sculpture. Now I will go through different fields. First, there is an awakening sense of the human body. And it's quite interesting. You can see the difference between those mythical images of the human body, which are still dominant in Indian art. You can see that when Buddha is drawn or sculpture is made, it has not completely human attributes or kind of objectively seen. There are certain things which are introduced from the sense of the beauty as it was seen in the mythical structure. The elements of the nature were introduced to present the beauty of the body of Buddha. And they are all called, they have names. For example, the knee or the leg has to be like this, and this has to be like a fish, and the eyes have to be like that, and they are all identified with other images, because the beauty and harmony of those imageries are important to introduce within the human body. So human body is not fully yet human. Only this, we can see it only in the Greek structure, where it appears for the first time as a fully, nearly anatomic human body. You can see the muscles, you can see the beauty of it also. So this awakening sense of human body expressed in the sculpture, which forms a precondition of the later conscious realization of space. Now man has to appear as a spatial being. Second, there is this so-called archaic smile, a mysterious smile remote from pain and joy, but reflecting the awakening and dawn of the emergent radiant human countenance. This is the word, really, that independence. Independence from all possible relations. Finally, the formation of the individual with all those deeper structures emerging in him as individual. And the third, there is a gradual appearance of the free and clear forehead, which in the earliest sculpture is covered by artfully plaited hair, almost downward to the eyebrows, a protection, as it were, of the still dreaming forehead. Even today, this forehead, unawakened from dream, with hair loosely combed over it, can be seen among male persons. And he continues, I don't continue, because you can see this forehead not only among male persons, but rock stars, dreamy world covering their forehead. You know, it's an interesting image. Maybe will lead you to some intuitions. The emergence of mental structure in drama. And here we have a very interesting image which he presents. In Greek drama, based on the ritual presentation of Dionysus, the chorus stood in opposition, as it were, to the individual performers, criticizing or explaining their actions. We have an individual who acts in contrast to common psyche and distinct from it. Even if he acts in the name of the god, he is still distinct from it, from the chorus, from the background, which suggests and criticizes the action of the individual. Now look at this beautiful ritualistic picture. I will come also to Indian theater because it's very similar in that sense. Natya Shastra speaks of it. The Etruscan word persona was most likely etymologically related to Greek prosopon, mask. The performer wearing the mask is placed in opposition to the chorus. The performer was called Hippocrites. Now we know who is Hippocrates. Finally, the performer, the one who performs, which meant essentially the responder. And in the early Greek period, he corresponds mythically as the individual soul to the common soul and forms its reciprocal pole. He responds or reciprocates to the words of the chorus, subsuming it and establishing the polar equilibrium and polar complement. Later, in tragedy, this process undergoes a change. The performer is no longer a responder in the mythical sense, rather as an individual. One becomes conscious. When one becomes conscious, he represents the opposite or antithesis of the chorus, the unconscious. The mask, now this is the major statement, the mask as an expression of the magic egolessness gives a way to the mask in our modern sense, which depersonalizes or obstructs the true ego. The ego concealed behind it in the newly acquired dimension of depth, which is as inaccessible to the magic structure as the spatial behind. Now, this is the most mysterious statement, and it requires dwelling. You have to really nearly meditate on it, read it several times, and find what he wants to say. But to me, it looks like that he wants to say is the mask, which comes from the magic egolessness, the mask where the individual is not yet individual, but he is there, is again coming back in the mental structure to cover up a true ego sense or true personality which has to emerge and gives it a right to act outside and to form its world and to see its world outside. Look at this beautiful intuition that the magic structure contributes to the mental structure with this ego sense. Does it make sense?
You said cover up, that means supports it.
No, covers up the true individual, but gives it an opening to the outside magic world. Outside magic world. It's mental world. Yes. So there was a gradation from the performer who was responding to the psyche, to the we-oriented psyche, the chorus, which became unconscious in the presentation of the magic mask coming up with a different purpose, to look outside and to form the individual. with the help of the mythical emergence of the soul, this becomes possible. The magic mask becomes the ego mask, the individual mask, with the presence of the soul. If that would be not there, it would never emerge, and that's what he says. It is as inaccessible to the magic structure as the spatial behind. It can't be accessible in a magic structure, because the soul is not yet there emerged. So that's why they differ, but that's how they are also similar. Now, since you mentioned already the lawgivers, there are different lawgivers, and they appear, and he gives these examples of Indian primal male, the lawgiver Manu, the Cretan king Minos, the son of Zeus and Europa. Look at this. The son of Zeus and Europa, king Minos, and they're all from the same root, to think. And the first historical Egyptian king Menes, or the first human pharaoh who inherited Egypt directly from Horus. So when the man comes, human being comes and becomes the lawgiver, we have these three distinguished names, Manu, Minos, and Menes. Where the lawgiver appears, he upsets the old equilibrium, mythical polarity, and in order to re-establish it, laws must be fixed and established. Only a mental world requires laws. The mythical world, secure in the polarity, neither knows nor needs them. Now we can see laws and regulations in our will. They are part of this mental structure and emergence, and they are absolutely legal in that sense. Now, I've just mentioned before monotheistic religions. I don't go into them again. They are all appearing from the same need of emergence of individual. We have a teacher who brings the law. The only thing which is maybe interesting for some people would be that Moses himself introduces two structures in one go. He introduces the law, the mental structure, 10 commandments, how to behave, and at the same time he introduces the mythical history of his people to them, because they lived in the magic structure before. They were worshipping the golden bull and the powers of nature, and he brings to them at one go two things: language, the word, the expression of the mythical structure, the mythical history, and the law, how to behave. Maybe it makes them so special in that sense, because they got it in one strike, two things.
Because this is a psychological approach to understanding, it might be helpful to remember the concept of identity.
Yes, it might be helpful to remember all those things, because we are moving into the empty.
Like with the mask image,
right.
With the transition from the mask as the respondent to the other pole, to the mask as that which becomes the identity of the person.
Right.
And then the person's true identity recedes and becomes the identity of the superego, the identity of the law. So then the individual is that, but actually is not that.
Ego sense, which is indispensable for the mental structure. Now, there was a transition in philosophy. Philosophy itself can be seen as a prerequisite to the mental structure, without which mental structure cannot emerge, philosophy as such. So philosophy itself, Parmenides was, and especially his pupil Zeno, 450 BC, defines the comprehension of being as spatially extended being. We have space around it, and we have body. But the decisive fact is that space assumes form in conceptual thought, in philosophical statement and formulation, which in turn lead via Socrates to logic, just one generation later. And with logic we step out into the clarity of thought where we can breathe freely after having been only too long devoted to magic darkness and mythical twilight. It's a Gebser here. It's quite interesting. Clarity is where there is not further search, according to Blood. Clarity is there where there is no further search. Yet, it is precisely this search for truth which supplants truth itself that was characteristic of Socrates and even Pythagoras. Parmenides first made an attempt to place the new element thought and being, because it is identified with thought, into opposition with non-being. And this non-being is definitely a reference to the mythical context, whose spacelessness is henceforth mentally defined as non-being. Now, here, of course, all that issue comes up with Plato, who wanted to, you know, banish bards from his Republica, because they are kind of bards who are singing the myths from the past. They are not rational beings. We have all these issues coming up, the struggle between the two structures, you know, in this transitional period.
I would say that the main factor in this transition is by making the material world correspond to the magical world and become non-being.
Right.
That root of everything becomes non-being, and being becomes what we know. Knowing and being become identified, but that which from which everything arises becomes zero. So we separate, the human mind then separates itself through thinking from the world in which it is rooted. Then all knowing then becomes abstract.
Yeah, basically, the magic structure, so to say, hijacks the soul in such a way that it creates this mental possibility of the ego emerging. It really overtakes it in some way. So all this Pythagorean harmonics of the magic structure presented in a thought way, finally, that it can take over the mythical demand, the demand of the true ego, the psyche, to claim its origin. So it's a major shift, that magic structure takes over and presents itself in a new form.
And I think with all the movements who wanted to break the power of definition, that this was one of the force to the set up definitions and the power going with it to break it and to open it up again.
But it cannot be explained why it is so, why that takes over or this takes over, because we do not really, we have to really see that archaic, intent, intent of creation. We don't see it here, so we kind of lost. We're just stating the thing, which is in itself not helpful, if we don't have that deeper vision. But we have to go through this stage. Gebser says it's impossible.
Right. And that's the genius of Gebser.
Right.
He sees this as the inception, and you can't really explain it except by recognizing it.
Right. But we can explain everything else, by the way. Well, at least he did, to a certain degree. So the word, which is property of the mythical structure, is emerging into a mental language, and it's also a very interesting shift. We did this study in our linguistic course, partially. So the difficulties against which conceptualization struggled are more intelligible if we recall the psychic and vital profusion inherent in every word at that time. Each word was the flaring up of an aspect of the psyche and the visible psychic reality, which, undifferentiated, includes the one or the other aspect of the same word as a kind of sympathetic vibration. Now, this is exactly the theory which Aurobindo gives in his Origins of Aryan Speech. He speaks in the same way about etymological transparency, that every word has many different kindred words related to it by sound, carrying the same imprint or the same impression of the sense, and can be easily substituted and used, words were with clans, falling into the space of their own etymological root from which many families emerged. So that richness, that this wealth of connotation in each word, which to us appears like an irritating hyperfertility, and this is very true, you can notice this in the rational thinking, what is all these hints, you know, a kind of luminous light with a bright shining radiances.
Equal
yes. Disperse all the darkness.
No words.
And what does it mean? You know, it doesn't mean anything to mental structure which wants to distinguish what is what and call it exactly as it should be. And not anything in between and all these epithets, endless.
But this mental structure, this light is going with the mental structure.
Well, yes.
Well, it's light,
much.
Wave or matter. I mean, that's from the mental structure. Forget radiance. Let's talk about it being a wave or a particle. And that's what the mental structure does.
Right.
It gets lost from the experience of being a sunburn.
Now, what is interesting here, which to us appears like irritating hyperfertility, where even the unspoken aspect is conveyed. And it's a very particular feature of the mythical structure. When the hymns are speaking about something, they're speaking by also not speaking something. What they didn't mention and why they didn't mention it there has a meaning. And you can feel it and you can figure it out. This feature is no more there in the mental structure. You don't have anything suggested by presumptions or that something is not spoken as a meaning. Posed nearly insurmountable difficulty of expression to early philosophical attempts. Now, you can imagine that from this language to come to the conceptual language would be nearly impossible to break it down. So the Parmenides' theory of being is an eloquent example of these difficulties. It requires centuries to sufficiently devitalize and demythologize the word so that it was able to express distinct concepts freed from the wealth of imagery, as well as to reach the rationalistic extreme where the word, once a power and later an image, was degraded to a mere formula. That's what happened today. The word is simply a token, an indication of some thought behind, but nothing more than that. It doesn't have power. Oh, of course it has power somewhere in poetry.
This sounds like nothing. Like the emergence of creating a structure of knowledge that's built from the foundation of specific definitions of terms, point, line, direction, and so forth. And the irony in geometry is that where you can create a perfect rectangle, a perfect circle, and dissect that in nature, if you look at the tree, it's not a perfect circle. Perfect circles rarely occur in nature. So to take the structure of mathematics and knowledge and then try to superimpose it on an understanding of the world.
It's a very valid thought, by the way, that mental structure introduces this perfect geometry which wasn't there. In the magic structure, geometry plays another role altogether. But here it becomes completely rationalized, perfected, which is not possible to find in nature. And that is the artificial part of it.
It's interesting with the integral, everything integrated, and looking again at the mathematics and the fractals and a different way to measure, a different mathematics language used to measure the world that's more closely related to what is experienced materially by the senses has emerged in the 60s and the 70s.
Mm. Fractal design, that fractal
chaos dynamics.
Yes, it's towards the integral structure, I believe. Yeah? Mm-hmm. So polarity and duality of the word. The duality of the mental structure differs in one essential aspect from the polarity of the mythical structure. In polarity, correspondences are valid. Now, in this polarity of the mythical view, correspondences both are valid, not one. And other is just shading it. Not shading, but both are valid. Every correspondence is a complement, a completion of the whole. Whatever is spoken is corroborated by the invisible and latent unspoken to which it corresponds. In the polar and perspectival world of the mythical structure, both the voice and the muteness appropriate to myth, what is spoken and what is left unsaid, are correspondences and complements to each other. One can see it by reading hymns. I can really have it. Huh? In hymns, what is unspoken is as valid as what is spoken. They suspend and supersede the polarity, returning to the near integrality, to an identity that nonetheless diminished since its archaic authenticity seemed to be irrecoverable. It is a recompleted, not a completed identity. Recompleted identity. So in the mythical structure, this polarity plays this role to recomplete identity. We will come to the different modes of thinking, oceanic thinking and others, and we will see paradoxical and pyramidal. It's on the way. How it is recompleted and not completed. And it's a very kind of, it's a key to some understanding that archaic structure cannot be completed in the mythical. It requires more. It goes somewhere else. It should accomplish more on the way. But with respect to duality, we cannot speak of correspondence or complementarity as we could in the case of polarity. In the mental realm, we can never speak of something, but only determine something or conceive of it. We cannot speak something. We cannot speak what we are in the mental structure. We will have to present it. Present it as such, to conceive of it, but not really be it. Be it in the expression. That's what my teacher in my university, first time when I was very excited to study Vedic literature, said, but you see, you don't have to be a fish to know how fish is. It was a complaint towards my full identity with the material which I wanted to know. Because I wanted to be it, to become it, to feel how they feel, to know how, what they know. But I had to study it on the distance. I had to, not to become a fish in order to know how fish is. This is the mental structure.
You just need to know the structure of the fish.
Yes. I have to cut it to see what is inside, you know, how it is spatially arranged, how chemicals are influencing the brain of the fish, how it wants to eat, and so on and so forth. I have to know all the rest, but not to know how fish feels. There is a very good anecdote of Zhuangzi, you know, when he is going with his disciple on the bridge, and he sees the fish jumping out of the water, he says, "Oh, how happy the fish is." And his student tells him, "You're not the fish. How do you know that fish feels happy?" And he looks at him and says, "You are not me. How do you know that I am?" It's a very good mental kind of feedback to the same kind of clay. You know?
But it's not in the Sanskrit also the state of identity in it? It must be in it.
Oh, it's everywhere in it, yes, in some way or another.
That your teacher said you should not become it, so he didn't reflect at this point.
Yes, well. So the directional character of time in mental structure is another very interesting issue. He compares the temporicity of myth, which differs from the temporality of the mind. The temporistic movement of nature and the cosmos is unaware of the temporal phases of past, present and future. It knows only the pure self-complementarity of coming and going, which completely pervades it all the times. Now in the mythical structure there is always something going on. There is a temporicity, there is a time factor, and it is very closely related to the soul perception, but there is no yet directional time. There is no past as past or future as future in comparison to your present state of now, because we as ego sense did not yet emerge in the outer sense to ourselves. So we are not yet aware fully of this directional time.
Yeah. I was thinking about the Iliad, where the Greeks are happy to spend many, many years becoming conscious of the wrath of the gods, and there is no sense of something else to do than that.
Yeah, this kind. So,
all time is there in that moment.
Right.
And then a little bit later, not very, 500 years later, it's quite a difference.
Yes. And you hear suddenly, "I have no time." Suddenly you hear this, because we all have no time. In the spatial structure we abuse time to the extent that it disappeared. It was suppressed by our spatial kind of perspectival treatment of time.
But it also still persists a mythical sense of time in us.
Right.
In the sense of assuming that we live forever.
Right.
Therefore, our sense of impending death, or death sitting on our shoulder, cannot be there.
Right.
But they
are
both there again.
Yes,
yeah,
sure.
Or it can take as many centuries as necessary to manifest. Right? It will be. We're no longer in a hurry.
And it's very true. So it's exactly what Gebser says, that all these structures are there present, though there is once in a while this kind of, or there is an inclination or domination of one of them in a more social setting, or our life altogether, individual and social life. And still, the still and three dots have to be put, because all other structures are still present and form our, and he will come to that at the end, of the dangers of those mixtures. And it would be kind of interesting to see. So it is this directional character of time which underscores its mental nature, and therefore its constitutional difference from natural cosmic temporistic movement, which is mythical in nature. Or we might say that time differs from temporicity because of its directness, and hence a retrogression into mythical movement can neither answer nor resolve the question as to the nature of our mental time. Now, this kind of trying to find the answer in that mythical structure to answer the question of time would not have any answer there. We would kind of lose the sense of time. Yes? and we would do what is necessary. The temporicity is there, but not the time sense.
Mm-hmm.